You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
The Dow Transports hit a new record high. What does that tell us about the stock market?
Well, great notable strength today, considering, you know, we're seeing divergence in so many other market sectors and stocks. I guess it really gets down to it's a market of stocks, you know, more than a stock market, because there's so many individual names that have been performing well in recent days, despite what you're seeing, you know, with the semiconductors and a lot of the high-tech names, which have been under pressure as the street is starting to reevaluate, you know, whether they're going to keep up with the earnings forecasts and projections that have so much been built into their prices. Not to get off on the transports, we'll touch on that in just a second, but, you know, names like NVIDIA and Taiwan Semiconductor were down today, and, you know, the semiconductor index under pressure. So the market's been rotating, you know. So anyway, the Dow Transports, according to Charles Dow, who created the darn thing, you know, over 150 years ago, it might have been that long, you know, basically showing relative strength today. You know, railroads are in there, CSX, Norfolk and Southern, Union Pacific. You got trucking, like Ryder, Old Dominion, C.H. Robertson, all those names, package delivery, FedEx, all these names, you know, compose the index. So basically, I guess, you know, the theory is if people are shipping stuff, I mean, there's business going on. It's when the shipping starts to deteriorate, and that's a notation of less, you know, economic activity. So they're showing leadership, and says the market is broadening out rather than just focusing on the you know, semiconductor stocks, which have been, you know, the big story here, as you know, in the last 6 months. So. So it wasn't AI, it was the Dow Transports today, with truckers and rails and the logistics companies moving to new highs. So I think that's really the big standout for me. I mean, if you believe that, the Charles Dow theory, you know, it says market is still going higher. And if you've been noticing, you know, many of the Dow industrial stocks, there's only 30 stocks in the Dow industrial average. About two-thirds of them, even though the Dow is off a little bit today, about two-thirds of them are up. And, you know, there's a whole theory that with the conflicts that are going on in the world, particularly what's going on in Europe and so forth, you know, capital tends to move to the U.S. to avoid risks in other more dangerous parts of the world. And, you know, with Europe and the Ukraine situation and some of the illogical moves that the European Union is doing, and the threat of war over there, and the fear of assets being locked up, even gold and silver, based on history, all this discussion about what could be happening in Europe, money tends to flow into the U.S., and when it flows into the U.S., it tends to flow into the big Dow names, you know, like, for example, today, you know, Disney was up, Procter & Gamble was up, Coca-Cola was up, you know, some of the old Star Wars, non-high-tech names, so, you know, money flowing in. So that along with the Dow Transports, you know, yes, all worried about what the midterm elections are going to do and what interest rates. There's a whole list of stuff we can touch on here in just a moment. But, you know, that's a positive sign in terms of money flow and in terms of, you know, overall market direction. So, you know, we can sit here and worry about, again, the midterm elections, the potential correction in September, October, which, you know, has some, of course, historic precedent, and the fact that the overall market is so high, and if some outlier event suddenly hits, some black swan event, and I can't even begin to, speculate other than, you know, with me, you know, I get into a lot of the less popular subjects, I guess popular to me, but not so much to others, but, you know, the release of UFO files and the disclosure that's going on there. Could there be a black swan and suddenly we find out that as many agree that there's an alien presence on the Earth, and they actually come out with that, which I doubt they're going to do because it's too dangerous. But, you know, something, I'm just making up an example of what kind of dramatic event besides an economic event could, you know, send the markets into a tailspin because of the uncertainty or the unknown factor. I mean, that could possibly happen. I mean, you know, if something like that really comes out, and I know the forces to be are trying to prevent that and have for decades. So then you can start speculating about the yen carry trade, for example, and if the yen continues to rally and what that means for the carry trade and the unwinding of positions, which could put pressure on U.S. stocks. So that's another potential black swan event out there. So, you know, many things these happen, you know, sort of out of the blue events, yes, the market could suddenly turn into a corrective phase, which is, you know, in one sense, long overdue here. We've had a big move, but we take it a day at a time here and, you know, try to find some, you know, individual names, and we've been pretty successful with that. I mean, one of our big winners in the last day or two was of all names, ticker symbol PM, which is Philip Morris, which, you know, has a nice dividend and has moved up here about 10-15 points in the last couple of days because their earnings are coming out in about a week, and the street likes the fact that it's a stalwart type stock. I guess you can compare it. It's not in the Dow Industrial Average, but you can compare it to the, you know, Coca-Cola's and Disney's and Procter & Gamble type names. So we had a nice winner there. You know, there's always something out there. You know what I mean? It's I've been doing this for a long time. If you're fishing for opportunities, you know, you don't have to be just looking at a whole sector or a whole index. You can find, you know, individual names. Investors, traders, for example, the Netflix aren't too happy today. They came out with some negative news, and their stock is down, and that was part of and considered part of the big Mag 7 names, as you know, and it's been under pressure for the good part of the past 6 or 8 months, ever since that Warner Brothers deal was called off, so that stock's under pressure now. So the Mag 7's having some problems and has had some problems, and it's all to be expected, as you know, these things are all cyclical and they do have, you know, their trading swings.
Are you surprised that the price of crude hasn't skyrocketed again with a regular exchange of fire between Iran and the U.S. the last 3 or 4 days?
Well, it's gone up. It hasn't skyrocketed, but what has gone up are some of the shares, you know, have done really well here. You know, some names like Valero, for example, and Chevron, which are part of our list, have done well. I think I mentioned to you in the past and to listeners that, you know, I was a big holder of Chevron because of the good dividend and the fact that my overall feeling was crude oil will ultimately retest or possibly exceed that $120 level, and I'm thinking that's still possible here in the next 12 months. Though, you know, it could retest their double top and then come down again. So I'm not through with the crude oil scenario, but regardless of that, yes, it has been a little weaker the last few days, particularly with the hope that things are going to clear up with Iran, which, you know, I'm very dubious about, because of the nature of the beast that we're talking about. I mean, you know, this is like saying we hope to negotiate peace with Japan during World War II, which wasn't going to happen. And ultimately, we had to drop the atomic bomb, or we were going to go to negotiate peace with the Nazis. And no, we had to level Germany and Italy, and we had to really clean out Europe with the invasion. I mean, you know, it's not going to happen. I just don't, you know, I'm just... pragmatic student of history and of the nature of the beast. So does that mean crude oil could go higher? Possibly, yes. Maybe ultimately it'll be resolved and it'll start coming down again. So I'm you know, more playing the shares, but I'm giving you a long-winded answer. So there's the refiners like Valero, for example, have done well recently too. But, you know, there's so much going on in the news front. You know, this is only part and parcel of what's happening out there. We can only cover so much on these interviews, but I'll let you go on with your question.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's going on with gold and silver right now?
Well, they're getting nailed. Silver into a new low as compared to the big high. I've been on record about this, back in early January, that even before silver got to $100, I was saying, well, it can go to 100, but then it's going to go back to 50, which is what's happening right now. And I don't want to get into too many details. A lot of the stuff I'm going to want to reserve for the newsletter in terms of specific timing and numbers. So we got to get some of our listeners to pay for some of this information. But, right now it's in a corrective phase. There is, the possibility of, with seasonal tendencies for a low in the metals in the June-July period, that we could hit a trading low here and have, even a bit of a washout perhaps and have a nice trading rally. The seasonal stuff says you should bottom for the year in this time frame. So I guess that's possible too. So as a trader, I'm thinking that maybe we sell off enough here and sell off sharply, and since we broke into new lows in the silver, gold not quite yet, we're getting close under that 3,900 level, and you get a washout, then maybe there'll be a nice technical trading rally here for those that are looking to trade it, but I'm not sure if that's going to be the big low or not. I think it may take more time. We really had, a multi-decade blow-off phase, in January. I know it's so hard to accept. I've been involved in gold and silver as many of our listeners, going way back to the 1970s and 80s. I remember when it was, $35, $40 going to 200, then up to 800 in the 80s, and back down to 200, and then all the way up. All this stuff we've seen in the last 40 years. So there have been long periods of time where you can lose a lot of money or opportunity sitting in gold and silver. And, history could have repeated itself here short term. I mean, we had the blow off in January. I mean, it took forever for the gold to get to that number of 5,000 that so many had been talking about for so many years. And just sitting there, nothing's happening. Silver, it was a dead dog forever. So, in reality, it was a blow off, and it could take a long time before you go back to those levels. Now, and I know there's a lot of talk out there, the ARMA Act and all the stuff we've talked about here on the interviews and in the newsletter about repricing the U.S. government gold reserve, which is around $42 an ounce in terms of pricing back to a more realistic level, and all kinds of stuff going on, and what China is doing with gold, and there's a lot of pressure to put the COMEX out of business in New York, which is the big futures trading platform for the gold and silver futures, which has been pretty much documented over the years as a negative force for silver and gold because they're trading paper contracts and they're not necessarily backed by the physical metal, and a lot of manipulation, which has been proven in court, by the way. There was some lawsuits against some big U.S. banking firms, one in particular, I don't want to mention the name, and there was criminal action that was proven and stuff in terms of manipulation with the silver market in particular. So now that could change. And if that changes, I think that'd be more bullish for the metals, that they would be more reflecting, real-world needs and demands. So summarize, maybe trading low coming up here. Whether it's the big low, I have a big question mark about that right now. I think it'll take more time, and I guess some extraordinary outside event could hit if suddenly the yen carry trade situation begins to unwind and something really happens with that. That could put upward pressure on the metals because it'd be sort of a safety valve for money that's fleeing equities and so forth. That's one possibility. So we have to watch the charts and the news here. But as a trader, you know, we're probably getting, we're getting a washout phase now, and there might be a trading opportunity, and we'll leave it at that. Mm.
Cannabis, will they ever legalize it federally in the U.S.?
You know, it's going to happen, but I don't know, again, how long we're all going to live to see it. I mean, I thought it would have happened already. They've already, they're in the process of rescheduling the cannabis from, you know, three down, from one down to three, and it hasn't happened yet. And even though Donald Trump, you know, issued that executive order to get the Department of Drug Enforcement Agency to do it, it still hasn't happened. And that's just one piece of the puzzle. But if it, once that gets done, you know, there are a lot of small cannabis companies, particularly U.S.-based companies, that are making money and would do even a lot better. And their stocks are really cheap. So, you know, we're holding some of those. We have the Cannabis Letter, which is one of our newsletters, and they're very depressed. The rescheduling is, of course, one piece of the puzzle. We've talked about that before with the Banking Act, which has been pending or discussed in Congress here in the U.S. for several years, just isn't going anywhere, but that needs to be done too. But the rescheduling helps because it takes off some of the pressure with regard to the tax issues and the way cannabis companies can expense their, you know, their business expenses versus before, where the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service here, treated the companies as illegal operations because of the fact that the cannabis was an illegal substance. So their tax calculations became very difficult. So that would be an improvement. But ultimately, we'd like to get that Banking Act done. Meanwhile, we trade a lot of some of the names, you know, a couple of the indexes in the cannabis. They have nice little swings. So if you check our newsletter, you'll see a couple of these. You know, some of the indexes which were trading, you know, $20, $30, $40 a share down at $3, $4, and they rally $2 or $3 and come back down again. So nice little percentage trading opportunities as the news unfolds in the cannabis sector. So it's definitely worth keeping an eye on. You know, you always want to watch stuff that's depressed or down because there could be, you know, huge surprises. And if you watch the charts, you usually can see something is happening. You know, I have this technique called the volume reversal, which I trademarked many years ago. And if you see the volume coming in to the upside, that's usually a good sign that news is coming or there's a good trading opportunity. But that applies to all markets, not just, of course, the cannabis.
Anything on the geocosmic front we have to keep an eye on?
A lot of stuff. Okay. You know, I'm really fascinated by a lot of stuff that we have up there, Jim. You know, the Europe has this solar orbiter, which they launched. So I guess we got to give Europe some credit for doing some great work in space. So it's currently stationed over the far side of the sun. Now, just imagine this. We have this orbiter that's on the far side of the sun taking pictures. And it identified two large sunspots. So and one of them is at or about that, what they call M1 class of solar flare, which is the super powerful one. And the whole theory is, you know, if the sun rotates and if the sunspot, so to speak, you know, faces in our direction, that's what could create, you know, havoc here on the Earth. And depends how big they are and whether they aim directly. Of course, many of times they just turn around, they point to Mars or other planets, not necessarily Europe. So they're reporting that it's something to watch. And if it turns toward the Earth, they expect within the next week, we'll see if they are significant or not at that time or point directly. And that would be, you know, a negative. And I know most people listen to this could care less about sunspots, but huge impact potential on the Earth, SpaceX satellites that are up there, Starlink, all the stuff that's going on. And we have thousands of electronic gizmos floating around the planet, and, you know, they could be fried in a super M1 class sunspot. And something else that's really going on, and this is, you know, of course, I'm looking at a lot of stuff, as you know, related to this, but SpaceX began launching, you know, Starlink, as you know. And, you know, astronomers have been increasingly concerned that it's almost impossible now to take a deep sky image without satellite streaks in the sky. You know, they're just all that congestion up there. Apparently, the stuff that I've been reading, Jimmy, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's about 11,000 functioning satellites floating around out there. So what the new news is, which is sort of scary or maybe just interesting, depends how technologically, pro or con you are, the FCC just authorized a company called Reflect Orbital Inc. to launch a huge space mirror, and they call it Earendil-1, Earendil-1, and they want to launch it in the above the Earth, and it's about 625 kilometers. And what it's going to do is, and they claim this might be one of many if it's successful, it'll cast a huge 5 kilometer wide patch of light on the Earth, about as bright as the moon. So it essentially beaming light in the dark sky in the night, in the middle of the night, it can beam light down onto the planet and create bright spots. And they want to orbit 50,000 more of these by the year 2035. So, you wonder what this is all about. I mean, you want to light the dark sky, I guess, illuminate. Suddenly night doesn't exist anymore in certain areas. Is it for military purposes? Is it just a calamity for nocturnal animals and night-blooming plants and others that are suddenly going to start getting light shown in the middle of the night, bright light from, moon-level brightness, but it could be more if several of these are put up. So, this is very preliminary. It's an application. It's attracted hundreds of public companies who want to get interest in the project. So just imagine we have these platforms, these huge disks floating around the planet, beaming light down onto the Earth. And I'm trying to question in my own mind, why would we want to do this? I mean, I guess, again, this is a military concern. I guess if you can generate enough light, I guess you can focus it. I guess you could help grow plants or grow things or help things that are not getting enough light, perhaps. I mean, there are a lot of research. We have to go into the theory behind doing all this, but these orbital platforms that are just being approved in theory now, and of course, it'll take, say, between now and the year 2035 to implement them, how this will affect life on Earth here. And I mean, I know if you're enjoying the night skies like I am now in Flagstaff, Arizona, that's where I am right now, up at over 7,000 feet and going to the Lowell Observatory at night to watch the stars. I wouldn't be too appreciative of one of these orbital platforms beaming light down into a perfectly dark night sky, interfering with what you're enjoying. So, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of question and controversy over that, but I thought it was really fascinating stuff going on out there. And this is all related to SpaceX and our adventures into the unknown, and I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot more surprises in the years ahead.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Glad to be here.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.